You may recall I did a little survey a couple, three sessions ago about what topics were of greatest concern or interest to you. And there was a lot of interest expressed in research on vulnerable subjects. And so I thought we would talk today about research in children, since that's fairly specific. And then next time we'll talk about prisoners and medical students and soldiers and try to put them all together in a different light. And as I was reviewing my notes last night, I felt a little bad because most of what I have presented is about regulations rather than about ethics. But let me try to cover the brief ethics issue fairly succinctly. You may recall that the Nuremberg Code really excluded all children from research because the wording was, number one, the voluntary consent of the human subject is absolutely essential. This means that the person involved should have legal capacity to give consent, etc. So that standard, 1945, said no children. And that really sort of stayed the way things were until the 1970s, when a debate ensued that was really quite fascinating between two individuals. Paul Ramsey is a very conservative Presbyterian theologian who taught at Princeton. And he took the position, and I'm trying to distill several articles on both sides of the debate into sound bites, but his position was that non-therapeutic research on children is unacceptable because proxy consent is not acceptable, is not possible. So he maintains, and interestingly, fairly recently, the American Academy of Pediatrics has changed the wording that it uses. It no longer talks about parental consent for treatment or research. It talks about parental permission, because consent implies that the person consents, and permission allows somebody else to be giving quasi-consent for the individual. But that was his position. Richard McCormick, on the other hand, a Jesuit, fairly liberal Catholic, who taught at Notre Dame, said some research is possible because people ought to consent to benefit humankind. That was really a pretty new idea. And not many people have taken up on that, except just last year in JAMA, Ezekiel Emanuel, who is sort of a guru of ethics, he's an oncologist, a guru of ethics at the NIH, and the brother of Rahm Emanuel, had a piece in JAMA saying that we as individuals, as part of society, have an obligation to participate in research to further the benefits of humankind. So this debate about children went back and forth, several articles, book chapters, and so on both sides. And the current federal regulations, which we're going to spend most of our time talking about, have attempted to identify limited situations where it's acceptable to research in children. And I guess the reason that I'm not totally uncomfortable with just looking at regulations is that there was a lot of thought put into these by a lot of people from many disciplines, including medicine, science, theology, philosophy, and so on. It's important to remember as we think about the issue that research in children differs from that in adults because it always involves a third-party decision maker. As I just stated, true consent is impossible, but you can get permission. And secondly, familial and professional caregivers often have different views of what's in the best interests of the child subject. And finally, and probably most important, is the capacity to give consent. The capacity in children varies from zero in neonates, infants, young children, where in which population non-maleficence, doing no harm, and beneficence, doing good, are our primary guiding principles. Varies from that up to adolescence, where you have more or less emerging independent thought processes. And so as they approach adulthood, then the primary principle is autonomy. So we're really dealing with two different populations with a gradual transition between them. So the federal regulations have identified four different categories. The first being, of course, research with no greater than minimal risk. And if you're expecting me to give you a clear definition of what that means, sorry, not going to be of much help. And I'm sure you know the the standard definition by heart. You can repeat it in your sleep. the probability and magnitude of physical or psychological harm that is normally encountered in the daily lives or in the routine medical, dental, or psychological examination of healthy persons. Vague at best, but it's a place to start. But there's quite a range of opinions as to what constitutes minimal risk. And for better or for worse, it's your job to decide if a given protocol represents minimal risk or greater than minimal risk. Now, to give you a little bit of guidance, in 1983, the President's Commission, it's got a long name, but it's referred to as the President's Commission, gave examples of minimal risk, which included routine immunization, modest changes in diet or schedule, physical examination, obtaining blood or urine specimens, developmental assessments, and so on. I think those are mostly understandable. I'm not entirely convinced that obtaining a blood sample from an 8-year-old who doesn't want blood drawn is minimal risk. If you've got to hold them down to do it, that's troubling. But at least that gives you some idea of what range we're talking about. So your job is to ensure that the permission of parents and, when applicable, the assent of the child. And when do you need to get the child's assent? I really don't know the one age bracket that comes up in the literature often is age 8. The children over age 8 can give assent, and under age 8 probably not. Certainly age by itself is not an adequate barometer of whether they're capable of that. And we often think of assent as just not refusing, not objecting, not resisting, and so on. But it's really more than that. It's a positive acknowledgement that it's okay to continue. And so your job is to decide if parental permission is adequate, if we need child assent, and if in any given protocol, whether it's assent for all of them or child-by-child determination. The second level, according to federal regulations, is research with greater than minimal risk, but the prospect that the subject may benefit. So this is potentially beneficial research. And your job is to conclude that there is potential for direct benefit to the subject or a monitoring procedure that's likely to contribute to the child's well-being. If, and there are some stipulations on the backside. This is not an easy assessment. A number that comes back to me from the literature from a while ago is trying to determine what is the possibility of benefit in a phase 1 chemotherapy trial. What percentage of subjects benefit from a phase 1 trial? Right, exactly. And I mean, the numbers that I remember are between 1% and 4% of subjects actually gain benefit. My definition of a phase 1 trial is, can human beings take this drug and live? So it's really looking at some fairly basic questions. But, so you look at that and try to answer that question, and then you have to decide, is the risk justified by the anticipated benefit? Well, if, now I'm not talking, it's not always that the potential for benefit is that small, that's phase 1 trials, but if there's a very small likelihood of individual benefit, but a very great risk of detriment to the subject, then you may have to say, no, I'm sorry, you can't do this. Or is the risk-benefit ratio at least as good as an alternative approach? So is there another option available for this particular condition? And again, parental permission or subject assent when that's applicable. Then the third level is research with greater than minimal risk with no prospect of that the subject will benefit. And then it's your job to determine that there's only a minor increase over minimal risk. And what does that mean? Well, that the experience of the subject is reasonably commensurate with the subject's anticipated experience. Boy, that's pretty loose. Can't really grab a hold of that very well. And that the results are likely to yield useful, generalizable knowledge about the subject's disorder. So if you wanted to research in a disease process that only happens in children. You can't use adults. So you have to use children, but you have to weigh the best guess at the risks and benefits, and is this protocol designed in such a way that we're going to get good information for treating other children with this disease process? Then again, permission or assent. And then there's a fourth category. I must confess that I had forgotten that this fourth category exists. But research that's not otherwise approvable in any of these three categories is still permissible if you folks find that the research presents a reasonable opportunity to further the understanding, prevention, or alleviation of a serious problem of children. And if you think that that's a possibility, then you refer it to DHSS. And the secretary has to agree, and the secretary is given specific guidelines, which are outlined in the attached article. Involves experts and public comments and transparency and so on. So that's the range of possibilities, and that's what your job is as you look at these. And I thought if we've got just 3 minutes more, I'd give you a case example and just ask for your comments on this protocol that was proposed to an IRB. Based on a series of pilot studies, investigators suspect that prolonged administration of a new monoclonal antibody will prevent episodes of systemic staphylococcus infection in premature infants. So the investigators propose a randomized, double-blind, placebo-controlled trial in which premature infants will be given daily intramuscular injections of the study drug or placebo. And the principal outcome measures will be evidence of infection by blood culture, number of days of hospitalization following birth per infant. Sorry, not going to happen here? You don't like it. Is there anything about what I just read that jumps out and says, wait a minute?
Well, placebo, there's no benefit to those patients. You're sticking an unknown effective drug. You don't know the risks and side effects.
Right.
You're sticking it in on a daily basis.
Right. Okay. Okay.
It also said this was a new, I think you said it was a new antibody, so that implies it hasn't been tried out maybe in adults.
There have been some pilot studies done, apparently in children. So that means they have some basis for thinking that this may be beneficial. But the thing that jumped out to me about this is, why are we using placebos? Why do we have half the children getting another needle stick?
Is the baby going to somehow, because of the placebo effect,
stabilize their... Oh, it's double-blinded. It's double-blinded.
It's the gold standard.
Why not just blind the investigator?
And so I think you're going the right direction, but how are you going to blind the investigator? Good response. Well, the person who presented this case offered a fairly simple, put Band-Aids on all the kids so that the investigator will not know which one actually got the monoclonal antibody and which of the controls just had nothing done to them. There's a Band-Aid there suggesting that maybe they had an injection. Now, of course, that wouldn't work if there's some local inflammatory reaction, swelling, or whatever. But the point of the discussion was placebos may not be necessary if we're trying to blind the subjects, because these subjects are already blind. they don't know what's going on. But it still is a valid thing to blind the investigators so that you don't have some bias in interpreting culture results or blood counts or whatever. Yes.
So you're anticipating the prevention of staphylococcus infection in these patients
They're premature.
You're not treating them.
That may well be a valid criticism of the protocol as a whole. The point I was trying to bring out that with children, with infants, you don't really need to use placebos if you can blind the investigators. So, questions, comments? Waiving parental permission. I can't right off the bat think of any situation where it would be okay to do research. I mean, observational research, perhaps? That's a valid question, proposal, and I think that's something that the IRB would have to look at case by case. As a general rule, I think that waiving parental consent when you're researching with children is not a good idea, but there may be some exceptions where it might be detrimental to the child or to the parent to know that this is going on.
Regulations do allow that.
They do, exceptions. Mm-hmm. Good question.
Uh-huh.
Right. So the rules are fairly specific, and that may seem onerous, but I think it implies that this is a very important issue, and that people have looked at it, and it behooves us to go with the rules, or if they seem to be inappropriate, to question that and see if they need to be changed. Right.
Has that been used? And if so, are there any examples you might give?
I know it has been used. I don't know examples. I don't know if you've ever sent any from here. The little bit that I've read about it implies that it's a long, drawn-out process. It has to go through here, go up to D.C., and go out to experts. And right.
Yep.
Right. Andy?
I'm intrigued by this Richard McCormick definition, seeing if I understand it. Is he claiming that some research is permissible because people, which that to me is kind of ambiguous, ought to consent to benefit humankind? That assumes, I think he's assuming, maybe he isn't, that people have a moral conscience. That's why they would come to that position. These are things that they should be done, but of course children don't have. So apparently, what's his meaning that people, adults ought to consent for children?
I think that's his baseline. His baseline is that adults have a societal obligation to participate, and therefore we can translate that to children with parental permission. I think that that's fairly tenuous to impose on a child. That, fortunately, I guess you're right. Fortunately, I brought along copy, just one copy. of both McCormick and Ramsey. Now, I don't know if there's enough interest for Linda to copy them, or for, I'll give them to you for now.
Okay.
And if there's other interest, you can share them with around.
Yeah, it's just, do you know what, I'm just trying to think of what his background argument is. Is that his point, people as defined as children or people as defined as adults, or both? I don't know what people means.
Right. I think he started from people as adults and then translated that.
So I have a moral responsibility to sacrifice my children for the good of society.
I think that's an overstatement of his position.
Well, what would be the correct way to say that? I have a moral obligation to use my children for human research purposes. I'm just not sure what he means.
Right. Boy, it's been a while since I read the whole thing. But my recollection is that he's saying that any individual should contribute to the well-being of the total of society, that we have an obligation. If we want to gain benefits from better treatment, then we should participate in research as well. And then he translates that into the parents' obligation to do that for their children.
So if the child had a moral conscience, he ought to do it. Since he
right.
doesn't, we will let you use your moral
right.
conscience to do this for your child.
Right.
Wow. That's interesting.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it didn't fly. I mean, I think we came down closer to Ramsey.
Rahm Emanuel's brother is adopting this kind of position.
In relation to adults.
Oh, adults.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm sorry if I okay. misled you. He was talking about just about adults, consenting adults. He's fairly assertive, but he's a little more gracious. A little more gracious. He's actually a very good speaker. Yeah, and this question. Right, and this comes up in pediatrics not infrequently, that parents say, I do not want my child immunized because this very small risk of the immunization is greater than the potential benefit to my child. And so it's a question of, do I as a parent have an obligation to help protect all of society by generating herd immunity, or can I ride on the coattails of the others?
That particular thing would actually still, I would be having a high percentage that is still going to benefit me.
Higher.
Much higher than this.
Yeah, maybe your child would never be exposed to.
Right. A bit, but it has some of the same reasoning in it. Well, thank you for your attention and questions, and we'll see you next time with soldiers and prisoners.